going to the hurry-up offense.
At the 33, right side, across the 35, tracking to the left, 40, 45, 50. Fuller to the 40, left sideline, 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll, touchdown, Houston.
First down, Rip Jones, middle of the field. Julio, 40, 45, 50, 45, 40, 35, 20, 10, 5, 2. Touchdown, Julio Jones.
Derek, low snap. Derek looking. Derek gonna lob one for the end zone for Crabtree. Did he get both feet down? Touchdown! Raiders!
Oh, awesome stuff. Welcome to the DDFP, presented as always by McDonald's. Go get you some of that all-day breakfast. I'll tell you something. I actually walk like I talk. I went and got myself some in Nowheresville, Tennessee. Now added to the all-day breakfast menu, McMuffins, biscuits, McGriddles, all that stuff. Here in 66, we'll say proper hellos in just a few minutes. Maurice Jones-Drew and Ike Taylor. Fellas, let's jump right into it. Worst team in the NFL at the quarter pole now with a good record. There are a lot of candidates out there. Hate to start out cynical. Ike, how say you?
The Rams. and I know my dog mad at me. Well, bro, they really ain't been playing nobody for one. Two, they still got to go.
Well, that's not true. That's one thing that's not true. They beat the Seahawks and then they just
went
at
the Cardinals. Time out. They always, regardless of what their record, they always split with the Seahawks.
I hear you, but those are legit teams at least.
What's Arizona record?
1-3. I'm saying that's not. I don't know that we can consider that a legit team at this point.
Who?
1-3. Cardinals.
They're okay.
Yeah.
They're not that good. And who else they beat?
They beat the Seahawks.
Okay, the Seahawks. And who else they beat?
Tampa.
All right. Well, let me.
And what's their record?
They're bad, but well, all right, fine. So
I'm not going off last year. I don't want to talk about what they did last year. I'm talking about this year.
I'm with you about the Rams not being a great team.
I don't think. Give me 4 more weeks. Because your identity will show when everybody has tape on you after the 4.5, 5-week mark. Then you become you, and I would like to see them at week 8. I say 4-3 at week 8.
Maurice, radio voice of the Los Angeles Rams, how say you to this question?
I'm going
to
say the Eagles.
Eagles? Really? Undefeated?
Yeah, I mean,
I can see why.
Besides the Pittsburgh win, they beat the Cleveland Browns and the Chicago Bears team, and they haven't really, you know, played much of a team. I mean, Pittsburgh laid an egg.
Skitsburg Steelers. Went under Coach Tomlin, that's an old thing. That's the bugaboo. That's the kryptonite of Coach Tomlin's teams for a decade now. Ike, we've talked about this a lot. Their inability to show up against what appear to be lesser teams is a thing going into the 1-3 Jets. It's something to watch. Anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked with
– You just did.
I get it. I mean, Carson Wentz, he's doing better. But they don't have a really go-to receiver. They don't have a guy in crunch time that you can just rely on running back-wise or any type of playmaker. Defensively, I mean, the front seven's doing well, but when someone gets a hold of that front seven, things, you know, I don't think their corner's going to be able to hold up. So it's nice right now. It's early in the season. They already had their bye week. Now you have to run off, what, 14 straight games? Or it's 13 straight games. We're going to see how good you really are.
Well, I'll go with the Baltimore Ravens here. I don't buy that team. They've gotten fortunate a couple of times already early in the season here. But also, and if you're watching us, and we appreciate you giving us a look at NFL.com/DDFP/podcast, you can track it down. The Cowboys are up there, I guess. They're an interesting team right now. But I think the Ravens are a bit fraudulent. I think the two best teams in the AFC North are the Bengals and Steelers right now. What is the best team with a bad record, Maurice?
Mm. You know, it's tough because I got a chance to see, obviously, Arizona in person. But, you know, some of these teams that we have thinking they're the best, like the Colts, are not that good. They've never been that good. I mean,
no, we cited this one in the offseason that this was not a team that had been fixed just because Andrew Luck was coming back.
And then
healthy.
I don't think Breeze, the Saints are that good. You know, they don't have a defense. So how are you supposed to win games?
Well, they're junk. They're hot garbage. They should have lost in San Diego and they'd be 0-4 and they would have been done for. But in that division, they still have kind of a shot at it.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to say Carolina. And the reason being is, you know, you lose Josh Norman, but that one piece shouldn't be the issue.
It looks like it is.
It looks like it is, but it shouldn't be the issue. Cam's not really doing well. You add Kelvin Benjamin back, and they're trying to get him going. But somewhere along the line, they've fallen all the way down.
Yeah, by the way, the two NFC title game participants from a few months ago, a combined 2-6. It seems like it does come down to the Cardinals and Panthers as the answer to this question. Best team with a crummy record. Ike, how say you?
I'm going to say the Giants. Excuse me. We saw them last night. The only thing I dislike about the Giants is Eli. You know, Eli, when Eli is on, he's on. He's one of the hottest quarterbacks around. But, boy, when he's off, he looks bad. Mm-hmm. The good thing about it is they do have a potent offense in their receivers. But it's a new group. It's a new core receivers. Penalties have been hurting them. Eli have been hurting them to some extent. But I think they'll figure it out.
I think, I do want to talk about that NFC East because it's shaken out to be a compelling division, at least with the Cowboys and the Eagles, and the Giants aren't out of things, and now DC's made a little push there. That's a halfway decent division. We'll do more on Odell Beckham in just a minute here when we get into Ike's Corner and the job that Xavier Rhodes did on Monday night against Odell Beckham. How good can Lamar Jackson be in the NFL is our final hurry-up question. Maurice, I start with you. I don't know if you got a look at the kid on Saturday night.
I've definitely checked him out. Watched him and saw some of his high school highlight tapes a couple years ago. He has a talent, but his arm, he has to be more accurate in the pocket. You can run all you want in this league, but if you can't throw from the pocket, you're going to have an issue. Mm-hmm. And so I think he has to continue to work on being more accurate in the pocket. And if he can do that, running being the second option, he can be pretty dangerous. But again, the quarterbacks that run, you have to be bigger than what he is, right? Those guys don't – when you're 6'4", 215 pounds, you're not going to make it. Cam Newton, you see he's taking a ton of hits at 6'6", 250, and they're starting to wear on him a little bit.
That's right. So, finally, that attrition is starting to reveal itself even with Superman. Ike, Lamar Jackson, not guaranteed superstar in the NFL?
Nothing's guaranteed. I mean, he has the athletic ability. He's definitely special in college. Mm. You know, the NFL is a totally different monster. Just to piggyback off of what MJD was saying, you can just look at the great Steve Young, him taking his hits. And it took a toll on him. Now Cam is in the same situation, taking his. But these guys were big or are big. Lamar, as far as like size wise, he's not that big in stature. People love and as a defender, love when a quarterback loves to run because we're trying to get you out of the game as soon as possible. Having a pocket presence, he's still fairly young. What I do like about Coach Petrino, he's worked real well with quarterbacks. Right now, I just can't see it until he get a pocket presence. He kind of reminds me of Marcus Mariota.
Hmm.
You know, just that style of play. A little bit more athletic than Marcus at the college level. But just the transition, I think he would kind of have a hard transition right now from college to the NFL because you do have to sit in the pocket. You do have to make them tight throws in the windows. And I don't think he's ready right now. As far as, like, athletic abilities, there's nobody more exciting than Lamar Jackson, other than McCaffrey over there at Stanford, but time will tell.
All right, well, listen, great weekend of college football and pro football. We're at the quarter pole, like I say, so let's start the show! Yes, hi and hello, football fans, and welcome to the Dave Damashek football program presented by McDonald's. Go get that all-day breakfast like I did. Yes, I had to jump on an airplane on Friday night, fly the red eye. I can't sleep on red eyes.
Love
to begin
it.
With.
Go straight to sleep.
I can't do it. And what's worse is something got screwed up with my reservation, so I had the middle seat on an overnight flight across the country.
Oh,
miserable.
Boy.
Then I had to catch one of those prop planes from Charlotte, North Carolina, down to the Tri-Cities in Tennessee. And so I was just desperate for some food. And there, like a mirage, like an oasis, I saw the big golden arches, and I pulled in, and I had myself a sausage McMuffin, and I got the hash brown with its own little paper sleeping
bag. You like how you set that story up? That was pretty legit.
Well, yeah. I want to talk about a bunch of things. We have to talk about, like I say, the heavyweight championship of trash talking, or at least two of the contenders for it, coming up this weekend. Josh Norman v. Steve Smith, two guys prominent in 2016, about to have a showdown here. I want to talk about best win of last weekend, the worst loss of the weekend. We have much to get to. Real quick, before we do, though, fellas, let me say hello to you both, and then we have to dig in on a personal issue here. And you want to stick around for this. And it has to do with Ike Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew reception of Dave Damaschek's pleasant ways that apparently are not so pleasant after all. We'll get into it. Let's say hello to him now. Ike Taylor.
Hey, yo.
See, it's growing on you.
That's the best part.
Ike's it's the song he didn't like it initially, but now Ike's coming around.
But I put some respect on my guy who made that. Yeah, I understood that.
One Man House fan, Dick Banks, Ike Taylor doing gangbusters work all over the place. Watch him with his pal Maurice doing Celebration Station, Fashion Popo, so on and so forth. And every Monday night in the postgame, make sure you tune in to NFL Network. Ike doing really special work there.
Thank you. Love watching him there.
Speaking of special work, I say he's the voice on the radio of the Rams. He's also on every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday on a show called Fantasy and Friends on NFL Network. Tune in 6 p.m. Eastern. It's me. It's Maurice. It's Adam Rank. It's
y'all doing y'all thing.
It's good times. And let's say hello to him, Maurice Jones-Drew.
There you go. Straight out of Oakland. That's where he's born and grown, drafted by the Jaguar, addicted to the end zone. Now he's all with Damaschek. Yeah, that's his new home. So call him Maurice, we all call him MJD. You hear him in the back. MJD.
MJD. It's the little Jaguar gets me every time.
No question.
Yeah, you should watch it on video. We appreciate you tuning in. It's kind of fun, and I do a bad job of promoting this fact, but let's fix that right now. We stream this show every Tuesday and Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, so you can be in your cubicle at work or at home, wherever you please. Tune in, NFL.com, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and if you missed the live stream, you can find the videos at NFL.com/DDFP. Also on YouTube, we do the segments there. NFL Now has the segments. Tune into all that. And real quick before we get into this personal issue, personal friend of mine, Football Baby, is on a roll once again. And I don't understand why America is not I think we're cynics. Look at this. He made his way to Wembley Stadium with our pal Charlie Barker and his family.
Jackson DeVille.
Jackson DeVille met Football Baby. It's like Flat Stanley. He's doing a tour of all the football stadiums here. We appreciate Charlie Barker and his gang bringing Football Baby with them all the way across the Atlantic Ocean there. He also made it to MetLife thanks to Andrew. And then also, best of all, perhaps.
Well, he everywhere, Shaq.
He was black and white.
He's making a
football
tour.
Football Baby.
Yeah.
No color.
No color in that in MetLife.
Is that really his baby?
I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know if that one is.
I am prolific when it comes to that is my hobby, making human babies.
Yeah, that one I don't know. That one
I don't know that
color.
Yearns. And, I don't know that yearns right though.
And then maybe best of all, he made it to Heinz Field with my family, which is the best. Aunt Amy and
y'all say aunt. Y'all don't say auntie.
Aunt.
No, we say auntie.
Auntie. No, and then. Yeah. Zachary there. I mean, Zachary Benjamin made it there. And, Football Baby made it out for a special Sunday night explosion by Big Ben.
He got his passport?
Football Baby's got a passport. He's going to the
stamps.
UK now.
Getting tatted up.
Getting tatted, whoa.
He's been to five NFL stadiums. Go to @Damaschek on Twitter, pinned at the top there. I have the image, and you can print out the PDF. Take him along to the next game. He is a genius, after all. 10-1 now on the season. 10-1. He's now 81-32 lifetime.
That last one, it's a little iffy, though.
Which one? The Bronco?
One with the Bronco and the statue. Like, there's a live horse, and then there's this, like, Buccaneer, but doesn't look like a Buccaneer.
No, it wasn't even like a Buccaneer. It was like a chip of wood versus a live horse.
Yeah, he was going to go to the live horse every – it was kind of a slanted shot.
He took the Broncos. Slanted. That was an easy one, but for the most part, he does pick the tough game.
You got to watch him.
He's slanted the decisions. Yeah.
You know what? Negotiating your way through the game of life can be difficult sometimes, and, you know, I try to handle that as best I can, you know? And when I meet people, it doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter if they're – a professional football player or some big-time celebrity or, you know, I don't know anybody's name behind the glass, but whatever those people are, I don't like them to make eye contact with me, but still, I try to treat – no.
People you work with.
Everybody I work with. That's what the old man told me. I learned that from listening – my old man was a doctor in Pittsburgh, and I remember as a kid – going to the hospital where he worked, and I remember a janitor on the same day, a janitor and a woman who worked in the cafeteria separately saying to me, like, you know, all the doctors here, your father's the nicest one here because he's the only one who talks to us and treats us nicely, and all the other doctors think they're too good, but he is always good to everybody.
Yeah, I guess your pops being a doctor was always on time, huh?
All right, I have being on time issues, but one of them isn't being pleasant to people, and yet Maurice the other day, Ike... And then he brought up your name, too. He said, well, Sheck, you're a little bit weird.
You're awkward.
I'm not awkward at all when I meet pro football players.
I was politically correct. I said you're awkward when you meet people.
Tell me how. Explain.
So the first thing you say to someone after you meet them, like, hey, you know, let's Charles Tillman, for example.
Okay.
Peanut, right? That was the example we used. Peanut comes up. He goes, hey, nice to meet you,
Sheck. This is at the Super Bowl,
field. On the field.
His team's about to play about 3 hours before.
Right.
It's Ike, it's Maurice, and it's me. And Peanut Tillman comes over.
And then Sheck goes, well, you actually, you know, we've met before.
We did. What? Excuse me?
Yeah, we've met before. You may not remember, but.
He says that all the time.
That's what I told him. I said, that's every time you say something. He goes, but you know, 60 or whatever, how many ever years ago, we were on the red carpet and we were eating cookies. Like, out of his however many years he's been on this planet, that one moment, he may not remember.
He does.
I remember.
And that's awkward. It's just awkward.
I remember my
meals. Is that not awkward?
Very awkward.
Right?
Why is it? First of all, your representation of that exchange. Here's how it goes. Peanut Tillman played corner opposite Ike Taylor.
That's awkward enough that you know he played corner opposite
Ike Taylor. Why is that awkward that I would know that Ike Taylor, who I like, is what know a little bit about his football history, but that you, he played with Peanut Tillman.
But you that he played us like you just like went into intimate detail there.
That's not intimate detail. So he comes over to say hello to his old friend Ike Taylor, Peanut Tillman. Hey, oh, too bad you're not out here for the big Super Bowl, but you know, great stuff this year in Carolina and so on. And he said, this is Maurice. Oh, yeah, we've met before. This is Sheck. And I go, like, oh, yeah, hi. And Peanut goes, like, yeah, nice to meet you. And I go, actually, you know, we met a couple years ago.
But you always do
that. On the red carpet.
But
I do that. That's I just said exactly right. I always do that. It has nothing to do with
you. But I'm just saying that's awkward. Like, you could be like, well,
how you co-sign yourself?
If Emma VP behind the glass and came up and somebody said, oh, Emma, this is Dave. And she said, oh, hi, nice to meet you. I'd say, oh, actually, you know, maybe we worked together if I worked with her somewhere before, I would cite that same way. You guys are being
so you've got to say that every time.
That's right. You guys
are
being.
I've never seen you do that without
false.
With a
that is
person.
So outrageous. And that's narcissism of a pro football player to think that I'm supporting myself.
So you're damn near groupie.
That's what you're saying. That's what you're suggesting
is that
I do that with just pro football players.
You do that with
that's narcissistic.
No,
I do
not.
That with everybody. I do that with everybody.
So on, if we player. See, what's I have I've never seen you in that situation before. I only can tell you the situation I've seen you in, and at the Super Bowl, we've done it every time. You pull that out. That's your go-to.
If I've met a human being before, I tell them, "Oh yeah, we've met before." I always do that standardly. It has nothing to do with whether or not you played pro football or you're a celebrity or something.
Like, I don't know, Sheck.
You just go into detail. Like you said, tell the people what you said. Well, we were eating cookies on the red carpet.
That's what I said to him. I said, Peanut, you and I actually ate Girl Scout cookies on the red carpet. He's like,
that's too much detail.
Do you know what Peanut Tillman said back to me? Do you remember that part?
I remember what he said.
He said, oh, yeah, I remember that. I ate a Thin Mint and a Samoa cookie together, right? And I said, yeah, that's exactly right.
So it's crazy that you knew exactly what he ate at that. Or you either have the memory of an elephant.
It was very funny.
Or you're a groupie, one of the two.
It was very funny. And, you know, I've eaten Girl Scout cookies with another NFL football player before. Ike, explain.
Oh, this is – hold on, wait, time out. This is a setup. That's what that is.
That's not a setup of anything.
You got to watch him.
Yeah, you got to watch. He tried to set up. It's just weird that you remembered exactly what cookies you guys ate.
I remember
– How many years that was.
You know what I remember? I remember it, to a weird degree – my conversations with people. I do. I can always refer back to it. Makes any significant other, it makes them crazy to, I don't have a photographic memory, but I remember our conversations in great detail. So I can always bring that up in a negative way. No, no, no. When we, 2.5 years ago, you told me this about you, and now you're telling me you don't like, you know, that guy, oh yeah, it makes me crazy that you remember. I didn't say that, David. Like, no, you did. And here was the conversation, and here's where we had it, and here's what I said back to you, and then here was your response.
Oh.
That's right. It has nothing to do
you
with
be
pro football
Jedi
player
mind trick right
groupie.
Now. I'm just saying, remember what you
– damn near.
To remember what you ate with another man, Shaq. Maybe that's a go on a little bit too.
I don't even know what that implies. All right, let's get into some pro football talk here, and it's time for our weekly edition of The Thrill of Victory and The Agony of Defeat.
The Thrill of Victory. The Agony of Defeat.
Dun, 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 dun. That was a great song.
That's old school. I like that.
All right, so best win, and what do you fellas think here? I think you could make a case for the Rams going into Arizona, and we can be cynical all we want, but they have now two division wins, and that could loom large come December. I don't happen to think it will. You could say what the Atlanta Falcons did. Because that's what distinguishes them. The Falcons last year were 5-0, so it's easy to dismiss. Yeah. But they just beat Cam Newton's Falcons. I mean, Cam Newton's.
But they
Panthers,
beat them last year at home too. So
sure
that
did.
I mean, what does that say? I'm going to tell you this: the Rams. The reason the Rams, and obviously I'm like, you know, attached to them
because you want
to
know.
Yeah. The reason their win was huge is that there's a stat that says if you can win three games in a row, right early on. That it's going to allow you to kind of prepare yourself for the next. That's when players start to believe that they're really doing things. So it's always tough to win back-to-back road games, one. You go all the way across country and win in Tampa, then you come back to Arizona and beat Arizona in Arizona when they needed this game as well at home in the division. The Rams are the only team in their division to play all three games.
Yep.
So you're talking about – now, that's just the first part. Now you're talking about you have Buffalo coming from Buffalo to L.A., which is always tough to do the West Coast, East Coast thing. Then you go to Detroit, and we just seen what Matthew Stafford is. Like, he is who we thought he was.
That was ridiculous.
Right?
That's a good candidate.
He went to the same school as Jay Cutler and the rest of them guys that try to
– Ice.
Yeah, Matty Ice, those guys that try to act like they're someone else. Yep. But you are who you really are. And I just think that these guys, they're finding a way to win. It's not pretty. It's never going to be
ugly,
pretty.
But they're winning.
Yeah. Todd Gurley has 33 yards rushing, right? And the people are like, oh, he's horrible. But no. There's eight guys in the box, and their play-action game is killing teams.
Well, in the ebb and flow of pro football, and you look at trends through seasons and everything, you know, the teams that were offensively dominant were the ones putting up really good regular season records. Now, defenses would stand up come the postseason, but now I guess the Denver Broncos are the first one to do this, but the Panthers also got there last year.
Seattle,
right, yeah, right, exactly. And now there is this trend of the Broncos don't have a high-powered offense, the Rams don't, the Vikings don't really,
nope.
And yet these are the teams that right now at the quarter pole are among the best in the NFL. I'm going to go for best win. Pittsburgh Steelers. Call me a homer all you want. They just hung 40-something on a good Kansas City.
But it was, you know, Shaq, and no disrespect, I mean, Kansas City, they're really good defense. Mm-hmm. Offensively, they've been struggling a ton.
That's fine, but the Steelers put 40 on that good defense.
Yeah, but you had some turnovers from, you know.
Alex Smith. You know what's funny about
that? A ton of drops, too. Did you see all those drops they had?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something else that was interesting. David Carr said to me on Monday, he said, well, yeah, that's the book on Alex Smith. When it's rainy out, he doesn't play well. And I said, really? That's not a thing, is it? And he said, oh, yeah. That's go back and look at him in San Francisco. When it was rainy out, he just did not perform. Fine, I'll buy all that. And they had some bad turnovers early that turned it into a landslide. But the bottom line is, when you talk about pick your poison, Ike, you know, people always say the diva. Well, what's Bill Belichick do? He takes away what you do best. Well, what did the Steelers offense, what does it do best? I mean, you see, if Sammy Coates is singled up on the outside every time. Seven sights it, drops back, and throws it as far as he can. Sammy Coates is catching it. You have the best receiver on the planet in Antonio Brown. Le'Veon Bell is perhaps the best running back in the NFL. Seven keeps plays alive. The offensive line is good. Like I say, Ike, I mean, this the pick your poison with this offense, it feels like, at least.
Yeah, they right now they got the best trio. You got the best quarterback. You got the best running back. You got the best receiver. And you got a few good side pieces in Sammy. Let's not forget about Jesse James.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesse James has been scoring touchdowns. The offensive line,
and
for the most part,
the blocking game.
Yeah, the offensive line for the most part, they've been intact. You knew Pittsburgh wasn't going to lose two in a row.
Oh, especially, I didn't know especially, that. I was afraid.
Well, Ben don't lose two in a row. One, as a starter, he don't lose two in a row as a starter. Two, Coach T in primetime television has an outstanding record. Then you really didn't know what you was getting in the offense because Le'Veon Bell was coming back.
Right.
So the Kansas City Chiefs really didn't know what they was getting into. Now, maybe if D'Angelo Williams would have played, they would have had some kind of thoughts on what the Pittsburgh Steelers offense would have done, what Pittsburgh Steelers offense did. They wound up coming out in the spread wide receiver formation with your best running back outside playing receiver. So now it was like, okay, now we got to take a guy who's been in the middle, an inside linebacker, and send him out on Le'Veon Bell on the outside. That's unfamiliar, very uncomfortable territory for an inside linebacker. And you start him off two, three plays, pass the ball to Le'Veon Bell, get Le'Veon Bell in the rhythm, give him another screen play, then you go to shotgun. But dang, when y'all going to line up in the I formation? Not right now, we ain't going to line up in the I formation. Le'Veon Bell is the guy we featuring. Get in the shotgun, hand the ball off to Le'Veon, let him work his way. Then we get to the I formation. So the game plan what Coach Todd Haley had did was threw Kansas City Chiefs all the way off. You know, maybe the next team, the Pittsburgh Steelers play, they play the Jets. You know, they'll have an idea what they want to do with Le'Veon Bell back at the helm. But it kind of threw the Kansas City Chiefs off because you haven't seen Le'Veon Bell for the first time.
Yeah, I think that they came out and they attacked what they don't do well.
Correct.
Right, in the passing game. So those linebackers are used to being in the box, are used to stuffing the run. Well, we're going to spread you out and wear you down that way, and then we're going to come back later on and get downhill on you. My thing is, and this is always the case when you have a high-powered offense, because obviously we played against the Colts multiple times, when that offense isn't clicking, like what happened in Philly, your defense gets exposed. You have a lot of young guys out there, and that's why you don't want, you know, you don't want a strong defense and no offense, or you want kind of a balance throughout. Like when you were playing, Ike, you guys were balanced throughout. You had a good defense and a good offense. Then you had a really good defense or a great defense, and then an offense was right there as well. So you want to try to balance that out, because so many times when you have just a team that can only do one thing, if that thing isn't working that day, it's an issue.
The same recipe you're getting with Denver and the Minnesota Vikings. Like, they're real good on defense. Offense isn't spectacular, but they make just enough plays and hold the ball long enough so you'll win the ball game.
Speaking of making plays, Stephon Tuitt continues to just wreck stuff. All right, Philadelphia was not a good one for him or anyone on that defensive front, but Tuitt, again, if you're not looking at 91 – when you're watching the Steelers, you're missing out
because
he's killing stuff.
When I was there for the offseason, I'm like, man, when this boy contract comes up, he's like Aaron Donald. I said, man, when this boy contract comes up, he's going to get paid. Are y'all willing to pay him?
Mm-hmm. He is.
And he said yes.
That's high praise to compare him to Aaron Donald, but legitimately, he's got that big, big bum on him. You know, makes him tough to move around, but he's quick, too. I mean, he slips guys. He's quicker than anybody.
If they let him off the leash, he's able to do it pretty much, because he can play DN or D-tackle. It's just sometimes they get into the hybrid 3-4, he has to take on the two blocks so the inside linebackers can be free.
All right, let's move to worst loss. And, you know, the Patriots getting shut out at home. I think that's crazy. Who cares? And go back and dig up when Ike and Bucky Brooks broke down what the Patriots are going to do now in those two tight end sets going forward. I think they're going to be just about unstoppable. Don't worry about them. The Panthers was a bad loss. I'm going to go with the aforementioned Detroit Lions, Maurice.
Oh.
They're decimated the Bears by injury. They had Brian Hoyer at QB. I mean, but on defense, they're ruined as well. And Matt Stafford did nothing. What gives?
Matt Stafford is, again, I try to tell you, Jay Cutler, Matt Stafford,
I guess they're the
Matt
same
Ryan,
guy. Yeah.
They all do the same thing. Now, the only difference is when we talked about this a long time ago, when Megatron leaves Detroit, how we're going to see the real Matt Stafford. And the first,
but he's been good up to this point. Now he's, I mean, that was horrible.
Been okay.
He was good the first couple weeks. First 2 weeks, I'll give him that. Then after, it was like, ugh. Because really, against Green Bay, he didn't do anything until they were down 34-3.
Yeah.
They weren't going to say, oh, he did good. No, he was horrible. And then he comes back and doubles back. And so one of my good friends is a guy I went to high school with, is his quarterback coach, and I haven't called him because I know he's frustrated right now. I know they're all frustrated.
I'll give you one other candidate for worst loss. That's the Indianapolis Colts. The Jags had been very bad. I predicted that. I told you over and over again on Fantasy and Friends, Blake Bortles is going to have his big game of the early season. The Colts are crummy, and it's really shameful. Well, I'm not shameful. They're trying to do well. But Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano, I mean, people keep talking about the Andrew Luck wasting him. But really, I mean, it's not like Andrew Luck got there yesterday. I mean, they've had a chance to really build up. And it's ironic because if you'll remember, Irsay said, what was that, 2 years ago, we made a mistake during the Peyton era by just building it all around what Peyton needed. We didn't build a full roster. So that was their guiding principle with this new Andrew Luck built team. And they've done a worse job of it. I mean, this is a bum team.
The worst pick, I think, and it's not the player, it's the reason they took him, was Philip Dorsett in the first round.
Yep,
you didn't need him. You just went out in free agency and took all these wide receivers. Why go get him? Now, I get it, you know, oh, he's a speed demon, this and that, but Andrew Luck has to be protected. Now, the Jags has 6 sacks. You had one player have a sack and the Jags' third-round pick, Yannick Ngakoue, has a sack and a pick in the game.
All right.
The thing with – and this is what I don't get. You got time to build your team, especially to the quarterback's strength. Why you just don't go back to the way he balled out and the way you got him at Stanford?
Oh, my –
Why you just don't get your fire offensive line, get your okay running back, get your two possession receivers. You ain't got to get no big receivers. Two possession receivers – get you a pretty decent tight end. Now we got the Stanford system right back in place in the NFL.
It's also just on a rudimentary level. It makes no sense that you have the primary skill of your pass catchers is getting down the field, but you don't have an offensive line, so that he doesn't have time to unload it. You know, it's a weird. Just makes no sense. All right, let's do
common
some quick.
Sense isn't common. Shit.
That's right. Right. I want to do a couple quick 10-foot poles, and then we're gonna do the corner here. And you know, like always, thank you, Emma VP.
Hey, Emma.
There she, Emma VP, come here for a second. Come here for a second. No, come on, come on over here. I get a lot of emails like, why is Emma VP never on the show? I said she doesn't want to be on the show. Well, there she is. She's on the show.
She's
now.
She's behind the scene.
Yeah, gangbusters work, unparalleled producer. Well, I don't want to say that there because everybody behind the glass is as good, but none better. All right, everybody talks about.
No respect.
Everybody
no respect.
Does the – I like you. Hey, Emma, have we worked together? I met you before, right? We've met before. Yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun. A
couple times.
All right.
Hit him right.
I don't want that. Now, listen, everybody talks about the figurative. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. We have a literal 10-foot pole. Let's start with this one. This is weird stuff to me. The reigning MVP and the Carolina Panthers are 1-3. Maurice Jones-Drew, 10-foot pole this one. The Carolina Panthers are going to miss the playoffs. Will you touch that with a 10-foot pole?
Oh, no, I'm not touching that.
You're not going to touch it. They're going to get in.
Yeah, they'll get in.
All right, what's their path? They're going to get past
the
Falcons?
They're going to win the South.
I agree with that. That's right. You got that one right. That was
That's easy.
That was an
easy one.
Well, listen, it's not that easy. They're 1-3. They're looking up at the Falcons, but I think
they still put up 30 on the Falcons.
What they need to do is just take care of business when the Falcons come to them, and things will balance out over the season. The other one, like I say, I don't know.
I don't even like touching. He a genius.
Here he is.
Don't touch it.
Bill Belichick, the man who has no coaching tree to speak of, which is weird, but he
does. He has Bill O'Brien.
Is that one to brag? If that's your one to brag about, I don't know. But all right.
They won the division.
I think Josh McDaniels is going
to
– a lot of teams are going to regret not having hired him in the offseason.
He's the Peter. Epitome of the Peter principle. What the Peter principle is, Jack?
I do know what it is. All right, look at this. Here's Bill Belichick. And is it possible – I've said this – that if they lost a game in these first four games, that might be the only one they lost. Ike Taylor, 10-foot pole, the Patriots are not going to lose again, at least in the regular season.
Oh, yeah, they're going to lose.
They're going to lose a game.
Yeah, they're going to lose. They're going to go 14-2. Bam.
14-2. Who's going to beat them then?
We're going to see.
Denver has a chance to beat them.
Yeah, they're going to go 14-2, bro.
They play Denver
got the recipe, man. And don't forget.
I don't forget.
Denver has the recipe to beat
everybody.
Everybody, but let alone the Patriots.
Well, the Patriots have a good defense too. Not as it's not as I'm not suggesting it's
the Patriots got a good defense, but they're nothing like the Denver Broncos. I can't even put them on that kind of level.
All right, real quick, let's get to it here, Maurice. Love, make sweet love to, because we don't want to use the bad word, and kill your three teams. You're the voice of the Rams. You played for the Jags, and then you played for the Raiders, and that was your boyhood team as well.
Yeah.
Do it. We do it every week. Go ahead.
All right.
All three winners. This is a tough one.
This is tough, but I'm going to have to kill the Jags.
Oh, no.
Yeah, kill because the Jags. They just got their first victory, and so I want to be around winners.
Okay.
So we kill them.
And then I'm gonna love the Raiders.
Love the Raiders.
Them hard.
Yeah.
I love them hard.
Yeah, you're gonna get tied down with them.
Yeah, Well, I love them because you know they're second in their division. They're second.
Oh, so this is make sweet love.
Yeah, make sweet love too. But I love hard though.
I got it.
You know what I'm saying. And then I'm gonna marry these Rams because they're in first place. You got to be around the winner now. You want to have the best. I want to walk out when I walk around cool. LA.
Look at that thing right there.
Yeah,
that's me.
Yeah,
that's me.
See that?
Y'all see why I'm holding that hand?
Yeah.
I think he's going to get a quick divorce, Ike.
Week 8, they're going to be 4-3.
All right, let's get to it. This is I'm excited
Hold
for.
On, wait. Week 8, they're going to be 4-3?
Three.
You want to put something on that?
Yeah, we'll put something on
it. What you want to do? You want to do some push-ups?
We do some push-ups.
Okay, all right. They'd be better than 4-3.
You think
four
so?
Four.
So
four
wait
four.
A second.
They have a bye week.
On this desk here in Studio 66, the loser of this bet will have to do push-ups.
Push-ups.
Strewn across this desk.
20.
20 push-ups. Full push-ups.
20?
That's a lot.
You're professional football players. 20.
No. We used to. See, I'm a has-been.
I see.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a has-been.
Okay. All right, let's get to it. Like I say, Ike's Corner featuring the heavyweight championship of trash-talking. Steve Smith versus Josh Norman. Take a look.
If you dare to go one-on-one, I will torture you. It's going to be a hell of a day, man. Hell of a day. I don't think they're ready for what about to happen. Personally, I really don't care. But I tell you one thing, we're going to fly today. We're going to fly today.
Hey, I must be pretty good. They know my name for a reason.
He got to get off track, bro. None of boys. None of boys. Because every time we get out, they're going to stick him. We're going to hit him in the mouth. And if you think I can't play, you're going to find out week four.
You taller than me, right? But my paper longer than yours.
Yes, these two are prominent, at least when it comes to flapping their gums.
It's going
to
be a good one.
No. I think so, too. And by the way, I should say the bona fides, we couldn't have two better. Maurice at least claims that he was the best trash talker when he was out there.
I was one of the top in the game.
Who was your rival? Who could keep up with you in the trash talking department?
I mean, really, to me, like you could say whatever you wanted to me. It didn't bother me because at the end of the day, they're going to be like, oh, you're short. All right. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's the line that they would give you. You're short.
Yeah, and I liked it. Well, then watch me put you on your back, and then after I do it, you know, I'd give them a little fake hand, like I'm gonna help them up and move. Or
wait a second, who gave you the short?
Everybody probably gave him the short.
Everybody.
I can see that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people with no creativity in this league.
Well, but isn't that, like you just say, isn't the response to that like, well, then get ready for a short guy to whip your butt today.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that was more often than
not
the result.
But I talk to coaches more than anything. Like, I would say if me and Ike are going, like, I just beat Ike and we're walking, I'd be like, Coach, you better come get him.
You know what I would say? You know what I would say to you legitimately? And this might hurt – well, it won't hurt your feelings. No. It will hurt the organization's feelings. But I would be like, why do you even try so hard? You're on the Jazz.
Where well, you know what, Shaq?
Why not save your health and your energy? You're on this team?
But when they would say that, I'd be like, you know, you're going to put some respect on my name. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I was all pro bowls. That's what I was doing.
That's a true statement.
You got to put some respect
that's
on
that. That's a true statement.
And so I would talk to, I usually talked. See, what gets players is not when you talk to them directly unless you really, like, you know.
When you talk to other people about them.
Well, you talk to his homeboy. Like, hey, man, your dog over here is struggling.
Come get him. He need help.
Yeah. That hurts people.
That's my favorite. That's one of my favorite Ike stories. What did you once say? You were playing the Ravens,
right.
and on the sideline, Ray Lewis started giving you the business.
No, Terrell Suggs.
he was well, you're on the field with him, Terrell right? Go ahead, tell that story.
Me and Derek Mason was going at it. You know, they got Derek from Tennessee. So he was one of those guys that's supposed to get me. Derek Mason was probably one of the best route runners I came across. And T Suggs was just in my ear. He was in my ear. He was doing a break, commercial break. He was in my ear like, oh, we about to come at you 24. We about to come at you 24. And I look over there. I see E. Reed and Ray Ray. I'm like, man, who over there talking on their sideline? Who talking to me like that? And it was Suggs.
And?
And I look twice. I say, bro, only a mama could love that. Don't you ever talk to me like that. Don't you ever talk to me like that. Matter of fact, don't even talk to me. Matter of fact, take that Halloween mask off. That's what you gonna put some respect on my name. That's what you gonna
do. How did
do.
That go over with Ray Ray and Ed Reed?
Them boys walked off. When you see people doing, when you see people walking off like this here, that mean they laughing. That mean they laughing. Yeah. But me and Suggs always, him and I are the only one probably was talking back and forth from a defensive standpoint. Because usually defenders don't talk to defenders. No. But him and I just, but don't get me wrong, man, I respect the heck out what that man do. He's still a killer, I would say that.
All right, well, let's talk about this major matchup here. Now, Maurice, you made a good point to me yesterday about this. They were teammates.
Yeah, so I don't think they're – you got to remember, Josh Norman – this is how I feel about Josh, and you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
I feel like if he knows you or if you've gone against him in practice, he's not going to say much. He's like that kid that's not going to bark if he knows you, like if you're from the same neighborhood. But if you're from another neighborhood, he's going to be like, oh, yeah, you know, tough guy. We know Steve Smith is tough.
But I hope they're not going to be like, yeah, Carolina, boy, they screwed both of us and they come together on that. I'd rather have them have 60
I'm not saying that because I know Steve Smith is never – like me and him have done some things together off the field. So.
What does that mean? Friendly things?
Yeah. Oh, like okay. Did some work together. I see. You know? And,
he's a good guy.
Oh, great.
Field.
Oh, great.
You always hear about that guy who flips a switch or whatever. Steve Smith, we've met him many times. Did I mention I met Steve Smith before? Yeah, I told him that.
I tell you what, I do, because him and I are real cool, me and Steve. Mm-hmm. I do know this about Steve. If Josh Norman don't want to follow him, he's coming to Josh.
Yeah.
He's that guy that's going to come to Josh. Hey, coach. I don't know what's their game plan over there for the Redskins, but wherever 24 at, I'm coming to him. I'm going to him.
He wants those problems.
So he want all them problems. So you can't shy away from a guy like Steve Smith. That's why you got little man, because he play with all passion.
And so that's why I said, Shaq, that I don't think it's going to be as big as it is, because Josh Norman really don't want them problems. Like, he followed Odell because they were barking, and it's a division you're trying to play mind games, but you didn't follow AB. You didn't follow Dez. And, I mean, watching Steve Smith right now, what he did to the Raiders, you definitely don't want
them. Shame the devil if at least one of these two guys isn't mic'd up. Now, Ike, you say you and Steve Smith used to lock up. You also were one of the foremost trash talkers. Steve Smith, we know what he was about. What is first of all, specific to your showdowns with Steve Smith, did you guys ever have any heat?
No, we ain't never had no heat. I got a pick off of this one.
Look at that. Ike Taylor with a pick in the end zone in Carolina. Good catch, fella.
Well, then he boogied. Josephine Johnny.
I was about
we ain't
to say.
Never had no heat. I should have picked this one off, too. We ain't never had no heat.
Because you recognized each other as great game, trash talkers, and so that let's not waste our effort.
Game recognized game. Like, he understand. I understand, man. Like, it's a mutual agreement. But, yeah, I know Steve, though. Steve ain't playing no games with them other boys. So they better be ready. Steve Smith always feel like he got something to prove on that field because he's this here tall.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
so he feel like, hey, man, I'm supposed to be this here tall, but I'm this here tall. But anybody come my way, just say something. Just look at me the wrong way. You ain't even got to say nothing. Just look at me the wrong way and watch what happens.
I got the best story. So it was 2007. We were playing Carolina and Jacksonville. And obviously Del Rio was in Carolina as a D coordinator before he came to Jacksonville. So Steve Smith caught a pass on the sideline. And, you know, I'm new. I'm still new. Second year in the league. I'm still trying to figure this thing out. And he goes, Jack, I know you hear me talking to you. you better come help this man. I was on the side. I lost everything. I was like, this man is talking to this head coach like he like Jack. You better come get him.
That is, I'll tell you what, that's awesome stuff, because that really psychologically would mess with a guy. Like, well, don't tell the head coach about this. Well, please, let's keep this between ourselves.
No, believe me. You gotta have everybody. Yeah, you, because everybody see what's going on the field, man. Everybody see what's going on the field. Like, if James Harrison or Joey Porter or Lamar Woodley would get to offensive tackle, I would be at that offensive tackle neck. Like, hey, bro, for the commercial, I'd be like, you know you're about to have hell today, right?
It's going to be okay.
You see them two right there? Them two boys ain't playing no game. You know you about to get your whoop right today. What are you talking about? Well, such and such about to whoop your boy. Okay, he might. But I know for sure, by the time Monday come, your coach going to be have a red mark on you because they're going to kill you today.
That's right. So you got to be okay with it. I think that's the biggest thing about trash talk. Like, when people are like, and you're right.
Yeah.
I hit him with the doc.
It could happen, yeah.
Yeah, like –
Well, I know, Ike, you've been watching Star Wars with your boy.
Yes.
It's the Obi-Wan Kenobi Jedi mind trick on the stormtroopers. Like, these aren't the droids you're looking for. Some people, the strong-minded, it doesn't hurt them, but you just pick on that. What does specifically? So, okay, Josh Norman and Steve Smith, as best you can. Let's do this right now. You be Steve Smith, Maurice. You be Josh Norman. What do you guys say to each other at the start of the game? Like, give me specifics, and we'll bleep it out. Go ahead and we'll bleep it out. But what do these guys say to each other when at the start of a game when you're trying to test emotionally the guy across from you?
Well, see, what Steve Smith is going to do first, he's not going to say anything directly to Josh Norman. He'll be like, this MF can't cover me, and he's going to say it loud enough so everybody can hear it. Right? That's how you start it off. Mm-hmm. You got to say it so all his friends and family in the stands can hear it. And then, you know, if Josh Norman bats a ball down, then Josh Norman's going to say,
I told you, MF, I ain't playing no games over here. You better take that somewhere else. And, you know, Steve's going to be like, oh, no, I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying right here. And it's going to go back and forth. I promise you, Steve Smith is finding Josh if Josh ain't looking for Steve Smith.
It's going to get to the point. And the only way it's going to escalate, and you've seen it with Jalen Ramsey, is if you bark back. If you bark back at Steve Smith, like, because he's going to talk the whole time. Like, he spins the ball, he looks in, he does all this. But if you say something back, then he attacks you. That's just how he's just like one of those dogs that just be, yeah. But as soon as you open the gate.
So is that your advice to, say, Jalen Ramsey or to anybody? Or if you're going against Josh Norman, like, if you're a vet, do you go to those guys and say, like, hey, Josh Norman, no matter what Steve Smith says, just don't respond to him? Is that something you would say?
Let me tell you what I tell him. God honest truth, because I've dealt with it before. If you want these problems, I'm with you. Like, I'm just one of those guys. Like, hey, if it's gonna be this kind of game, let me know now so we can prepare throughout the week. Like, Greg Jones has always come to me. He like, so what kind of game we having today, Reese? I'd be like, you know, I just don't like the guy across me. Like, we used to play Bart Scott all the time. I hated Bart Scott because we were in 2008. He hit me in the back. I was mic'd up too, and they'd never played it because it was just too many explicits. But
oh, we got to get that thing.
He hit me in the back for no reason. The ball's right over there. I was like, dude, what's your problem? I was like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I was like, since you want to play like this, we're good. And then from that point on, I was like, hey, yo, this is just kind of how it's going to be, guys. And they'd be like, all right, well, we're ready. And that's how you got to do it. It's your team. So, like, if me and Ike are hooping, and Ike, you know, kind of like we were in Indianapolis, Ike was like, I'm serious. I'm like, all right, let's be serious. Like, this is kind of how it's going to be.
It's going to be awesome stuff. Can't wait to see how this one shakes out. Also on Monday night, just real quick, Xavier Rhodes seemed to get into Odell Beckham's head. Is this now the book league-wide to try and give him a little extra business after the play because it throws him off? I mean, it seems to be pretty obvious that that's what's going on now.
I don't think it's that. I think it's he's not getting the ball enough, right? You know, I think Bucky Brooks said it on Twitter best because, like, Eli said something about his emotions and Ben McAdoo said something about his emotions. But, you know, Eli was the same person last year. Or not Eli, but Odell was the same person last year with these outbursts and things like that. You weren't saying nothing when you were getting the head coaching job, or you weren't saying nothing when you were getting paid because of what he was doing on the field. Don't try to switch it up now. He's an emotional guy. And I was the same way. Like, when you have a guy that's used to getting the ball all the time and then all of a sudden you don't want to give him the ball. You know, I think he was targeted four times or something like that. You got to get this guy going in the first – when you script, and I know Big McAdoo does because he's a West Coast offense guy, you script the first 15 plays, right? So it's like they call them either the dirty dozen, first 12 to 15 plays. He should be getting the ball at least five times in those first 15 plays. It should be plays like, look, we're going to get Odell going, get him, because he is your number one threat. I get it. You got Sterling Shepard and you got Victor Cruz back, but them two guys, they're not him. And so you have to understand that, look, we got to get this guy the ball and get him going.
I felt, you know what, to compare it to another situation where there are a lot of weapons out there, like Pittsburgh, I got the sense that Todd Haley and Roethlisberger recognized, you know what, this is 26's return, and Sammy Coates catches that first deep ball of the night and everything. We got to feed 84 because 84 has an ego, and we don't want it to get out of control. And you got to play with a big outsized ego if you're going to be Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown. That's part of the trick.
See, and a reason why I like – what I always say about receivers, they're divas, one. But with an OBJ and Antonio Brown and guys who are superstars in the league, when the game is on the line, you call in their number.
Every time.
So they feel like, well, dang, when it's one play left, with 4 seconds left, you want to dial up my number. So why you don't want to dial up my number right now to get us in that situation? So y'all know I'm that guy. I know I'm that guy. Go on, feed me a little bit. Am I selfish? Yeah, to an extent. But I know when we try to win these ball games, when it's 4th and 3 or 3rd and 11, y'all calling on 13 and y'all calling on 84. That's the first thing y'all saying. Because I'm making y'all money. I'm making these spectacular plays. I'm getting y'all paid. We going to the playoffs. So why all of a sudden you just want to take me out of the offense that fast?
That's how I think that is the psychology of a superstar player.
That's like – my grandpa used to tell me when I was a kid, like, if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will.
My father used to say,
that's the truth. Like, listen, you're right. And I almost said a bad word, but you damn right. I think I'm the man. I know I'm the man.
Right.
And so if you tell me every week that you're going to do this, and this is the issue you have with coaches, because sometimes as a coach, you try to, you're like, oh, well, we got these. No. We don't have these other guys. I had to deal with it. I played for too many coaches in Jacksonville. I had to tell them, like, listen.
It's only with me.
Listen, let's not play these foolish games. They know what we're going to do.
Let's just
block them and do our job.
Awesome stuff as always, Maurice and Ike. For the video consumer, stick with us. We've got our weekly feature, the Time Machine Football, coming up real quick for you. For the audio listener, we're back later in the week for you with our game picks, Handsome Hank, Matt Money Smith, and so on. Thanks to everybody behind the glass. And like I say, hang in here if you're watching on video. Otherwise, we'll talk to you later. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
That's Dave Damashek.
Hey, audio listeners. This is Emma VP. Stay tuned for Sheck's exclusive audio-only interview with legendary filmmaker George Romero.
Dave. Dave.
All right, this is exciting for a football fan. You got to make sure you check out Night of the Living Steelers, premiering Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, on NFL Network, and we're joined by a real icon of the film industry and a Pittsburgher like myself. It's George Romero. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm better now that I'm speaking to you.
Thanks.
Before we got going, you and I were talking about where we grew up. I grew up in Churchill. Literally, from my front yard, I could look out and see the Monroeville Mall with where one of your classic zombie movies was shot.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Small world,
We shot it. We actually... not known as well as the mall. We shot Creepshow. We rented, we were able to rent an old school, and we had our studios there we built all our Creepshow sets out there.
That's funny.
Very near there.
Yeah.
And right around the corner from the Monroeville Mall.
Well,
and
you don't
I
say
think
it.
There are still cockroaches wandering around. there's a scene in Creepshow where E.G. Marshall plays a Howard Hughes type recluse, very wealthy guy in a penthouse, and he's afraid of cockroaches. He's afraid of bugs. He calls people bugs, and cockroaches eventually invade, and we have to import all these cockroaches from Trinidad, and I think some of them are probably still there.
So if there's a cockroach issue in the Pittsburgh area, we can blame George Romero's movies for that.
Definitely blame me.
That's pretty good. I noticed, though, as a native Pittsburgher, you don't really sound, you don't have the voice of it. It should be George Romero, right?
It's Romero.
We shot that movie at the Monroeville Mall.
Yeah, down up over Monroeville.
Yeah, see, all right. Now you check out. You got the Pittsburgh bona fides there. Now tell us what...
Actually, I was born in the Bronx. I went there to go to Carnegie Mellon. So I'm not... But I don't... People say I don't really have a New York accent either, but I don't sound like Bernie Sanders.
No, you don't. Yeah, you're right. So I guess that's how you don't pick up any accent, is that you keep you stay on the move across America.
Yeah.
Tell us about what exactly is going on. It sounds fascinating, Night of the Living Steelers. How did you put this thing together?
Well, I actually, it was the NFL that reached out to me because... Somebody at the NFL realized that we made Night of the Living Dead, and we became this little independent film company and had a lot of success just about at the same time that the Steelers were starting to win after having a dismal beginning.
Many decades of sorrow.
And so they decided to do a special just about that, because we did at one point, my partner at the time and I, Richard Rubenstein, did 17 sports documentaries. They were all biographies. And they weren't all football, but four of the 17 were about Steelers. We did Rocky Flyer, Franco Harris, and both of those guys were kind enough to first of all, to remember me and to come out for this show that the NFL shot there. And we did the front four, and we did Terry Bradshaw. And oddly, sort of took a break for 2.5 years and shot these documentaries, and it was a wonderful experience. I mean,
they're little documentaries on Franco Harris, Rocky Blyer, The Steel Curtain, and Terry Bradshaw. So this is news to me until I became aware of Night of the Living Steelers. Again, the premieres on Wednesday at 8 p.m. on NFL Network. That's how you got your start, was by doing sports documentaries. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, actually. I got my start, and you'll see this in the documentary. I really got my start with Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first guy that ever hired me as a shooter. I used to do these little he had a feature called Picture Picture on his show.
I remember.
And I shot those. Those were remotes, and I'm the guy that shot them.
Amazing.
And everything from how do you make a light bulb. To Mr. Rogers gets a tonsillectomy, which I think there's a scene from that in Night of the Living Steelers.
Awesome.
And it was a wonderful time. Fred was great. And you know, most people that are in the biz, as they say, still started with Fred. I mean, when I was there, Michael Keaton was a grip on Mr. Rogers' name.
You're kidding. Wow, amazing. That is quite a thing. Yeah, you know, I remember very young, my father knew Mr. Rogers as well. Yeah, people don't realize, but if you listen closely, like we were just doing, he does, you can hear Mr. Rogers does have that Pittsburgh accent.
A little bit of it, yeah.
Yeah, you can pick up on that. So fascinating. So then you make these documentaries about the Steelers. Does anything resonate for you years later that stood out? I mean, this is still probably... is recognized as the greatest dynasty in pro football history. Anything about the personalities on that team?
Well, you know, Franco actually became a friend, and we're still friends. You see, they surprised me. We were at a theater looking at footage from the documentaries that we'd done, and all of a sudden I heard this, somebody coming down the aisle applauding, and it was Franco, and it was just great to see him. I remember that. We did Willie Stargell too. So we actually five of the docs. We did 17 docs. And five of them were Pittsburgh athletes. So.
I can't wait to watch this. And how did you then transition from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood to sports? I guess sort of like you say, moving across the country, you're never going to get too restless with anything. How then do you wind up with making horror movies?
Well, you know, that was just we tried to make a high-minded. Ingmar Bergman type film at first, and couldn't raise any money for that, and so we decided, well, maybe we should do something more commercial. And I had written a story that we based Night of the Living Dead on, and my old friend John Russo and I, who still lives in Pittsburgh, John does, we wrote the script for Night of the Living Dead. And you know, who knew? We had no idea that it would become important, you know, quotes, important.
Well, important, I think, in Hollywood 21st century means that they remake your movie, and so they've gotten that treatment. Last thing is, and I can't imagine a better person to ask this question to, why did the math of this, see if you can make sense of this. Hollywood must hate the city of Pittsburgh, or at least its sports teams. And here's the backing of my hypothesis. There was Black Sunday, which was about a terrorist attack on the Steelers playing in the Super Bowl. There was,
well, it wasn't the book. I have a story about that. I'll tell you. We actually got the Rooneys. Our law firm represented the Rooneys, and when that book came out, when Harris wrote that book, Thomas Harris, I think, there wasn't the Steelers in the book, and and that's why we were able to, you know, get the Rooneys to say, yeah, let's buy that property. But Paramount beat us to it, and ironically, they had to shoot at the real Super Bowl, and it happened to be the Steelers. And I was there. We were there shooting for one of the documentaries, I think the Front Four documentary. And we wound up in the stands when they were actually shooting Black Sunday.
How funny. And I'll tell you what, you look at that movie, it is some of the best game footage you'll ever see in a movie. It's remarkable. They have, because at the time you could get better field access than probably a film crew could get in the 21st century. So some of the stuff happens to be glorious if you're a football fan. But then you have sudden death, Jean-Claude Van Damme, terrorist attack on the Penguins. You
right.
have in one of the Batman movies, they call it Gotham, but it's Heinz Field. They blow up that field,
yeah.
And then even in The Natural, who does Roy Hobbs hit the home run against? The Pittsburgh Pirates. They don't. You see? Oh, also, Heaven Can Wait. Warren Beatty's Rams beat in the Super Bowl? The Steelers. Do you see, George? Hollywood has it in for Pittsburgh sports teams.
I guess so.
See?
Well, Pittsburgh, you know, it's always so. You look at old movies, and Pittsburgh is always a joke. You know, it's always, oh, where are you going to be stationed? Pittsburgh. it was almost a gag line. You know, guaranteed laugh.
Thank goodness Cleveland has replaced Pittsburgh in that way. George Romero, great to speak with you a little bit, sir. Appreciate the time. Make sure you tune in Night of the Living Steelers this Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. Otherwise, look for future showings of it. Going to be great stuff. And like I say, big fan. Thanks for the time, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. There he is, George Romero.
Dave Damashek.